This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, July 11th, 2021. After 16 long months, the return to live events is upon us in the United States. But we have record low ratings going into the post-COVID era of professional wrestling. An all-time low rating for WWE Raw, the second lowest rating ever for SmackDown on Fox, and the first event back on the road for AEW Dynamite, plus a rundown of all the events coming up, how their ticket sales are going, courtesy of WrestleTix. And more events have been announced by WWE. All Out tickets went on sale and sold out. MSG tickets for WWE went on sale. And WWE announced that the second SmackDown on the road will be a simulcast, a split telecast, as the Rolling Loud Miami Music Festival will co-host, along with Cleveland, WWE SmackDown. All that and more coming up, but first. And now, joining us from my South by Southwest, from South Buffalo, everyone's favorite independent ring announcer, Chris Golo, fresh from his trip to New Jersey earlier this weekend. Welcome once again, Chris.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I've only been back in Buffalo for a couple hours before recording this you. Yes, it was, I did a show as we're recording a Saturday night for NFW. It was at the HGO Wrestling Center in Williamstown, New Jersey. But what me and my friend who drove there together, Jonathan Ash, we like to do your this cult thing. My co-host on RTI, but we like to do this thing where, like, it's much easier. We're getting older, so we used to do the 7 hours there and 7 hours back, and we're done with that. So we'll do 7 hours there, obviously, but then we'll do, like, midway back, like, or, like, 3 hours in or whatever, and then we'll usually get a hotel. And the hotels we usually get, a lot of them were booked. They were very hard to get. And we found one in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And it was not what I expected. It was a chain, and for some reason I just stayed there. And, like, why is it, like, it's the name's escaping me. I was literally just there this morning. But so we get
Red Roof.
I'll find it because it's in the Choice Hotels Enterprise. So I will definitely find it here. Where are you, Choice Hotels? Our hotels.
Is it on your credit card statement? What did they charge you for a night stay?
Together it was about $90 with taxes and everything. So I mean, you know, for two beds, pretty affordable.
The two,
yeah, but still not the most pleasant experience that I had.
Not a four-star.
It would be -1, and then, you know, we Econo Lodge, that's what was Econo Lodge. Econo Lodge.
I have stayed at it.
Yes.
Yeah, and it also didn't have a great experience in New Orleans. But I don't want to hijack this.
Yeah, so we get there, okay, at like 2:30 in the morning. You know, and by the way, we went to Wawa. Sheets is still better than Wawa, but continuing on. So we got there 2:30 in the morning, and we made the reservation for the night of July 10th. And the guy's like, "You missed check-in." Like, what do you mean we missed check-in? It's like, check-in's 3:00. No, it says you could check in after 3:00. You could check in any time in that day. And he's like, "No." Like, yes, like, and if
he knew there,
I know, like, I had every hotel ever. And then he finally goes, "Oh, I guess I'll make this exception for you." You know, he just didn't want to do it. Like, just didn't want to do it. So yeah, Ash and I got through that debacle, but then we get to where our room's supposed to be, and we're talking outdated carpet, doors that chip paint, like very bad chip paint, walls with crayon like written on them, and holes in the wall, and the very smelly room. I was creeped out. I did not sleep much last night, let's just say that.
So you just got back.
Yes, not a pleasant experience. Yeah. So.
Okay.
But yeah, this will be fun. We're prime time tonight.
Yeah. At some point, maybe we'll do this live, and it'll be, we're doing this at 8 o'clock PM Eastern right now. How was your show? Any comments you'd like to make about the show that you worked last night?
Fun show. A lot of fun, young up and coming talent. As far as like high flying and technical wrestling and stuff and all that, actually really cool double submission finish by KTB. I saw in a match that I really, really, really liked.
Do you get to watch a lot of the matches? I've always kind of wondered that, because you're the ring announcer, so often you are at ringside, but sometimes you're busy.
It all depends on how much production and how much like communication I have to do with the promoter. Sometimes, like, I have to do a lot of communication with the promoter, and sometimes it's kind of just a...
Sometimes you have a high-maintenance promoter like Brett Menick to deal with that.
Yep. So, and sometimes...
Right? That's what you're getting at.
There's just a lot going on. It's a very busy place. And sometimes there's a curtain and two speakers, and that promoter, I don't have to communicate with much.
You got to stack index cards, and you're good to go.
But what's great about H2O is there's a... TVs, there's two TVs in Gorilla, and there's like two areas in Gorilla, and then in the locker room there's a couple TVs, so it's pretty cool. Like you can stop and watch or whatever, and I do try to watch it on the actual, like, out with the crowd as much as possible, but like you said, sometimes I got to go back there and communicate and figure out what's going on and all that. So but yeah, so I mean, it was overall a good show.
I trained
good. Sorry.
You're fine. I trained today. I've been training multiple times a week since June, I think. I trained today, and I don't know why, but it took it right out of me. Maybe it's the humidity. I know we're due for like 10 consecutive days of rain here in Buffalo, New York, but we did some drop downs and leapfrogs at Grapplers, and I've been home for a while now, so I think I'm finally getting over it and drinking coffee here out of my Sterling Cooper mug. But I was so blown up. I get so blown up.
Yeah, you gotta get that cardio. You know, that first match may be soon. So
yeah, I used to be. People would say, at least I haven't really felt this way for the last few years, but people would say that I would like be super cardio, king, blow people up,
the king of cardio.
That's a legend. At one point, yes, when I was on the amateur wrestling team at NCCC, Niagara County Community College, and I wrestled in a wrestling room, and they closed the door and did not let you leave for 2 hours. No water comes in with you either. And we just wrestled for 2 hours, 5 days a week.
That's
And I would get destroyed by, like, I'd never done amateur wrestling before, but I just got destroyed by people who were probably good in high school, so that they decided to wrestle at the community college and just housed me for like 7 months. It was a great experience.
I imagine the no water thing can't happen in 2021.
I wonder if they're still doing like, that. Yeah.
they can't be allowed.
Well, I think it was like supposed to teach you to cut, because you don't drink water when you're cutting, of course. This is a, you know, dehydrate yourself and get all the water out of your system.
Yeah, the water
carries a lot of your weight if you're only a couple pounds off.
Yeah. When I do MMA and I do, sometimes I'll do the weigh-ins, like I'll announce the weigh-ins, and these guys are like, can I get my weigh-in? Can I get my weigh-in done? Because like, as soon as their weigh-in's done, they can eat whatever they want. Yeah. And they look like almost like starve themselves. It's crazy.
Yes.
But
people die.
It's hospitalized. All right. So you want to get into the nitty gritty of the week that was the business of professional wrestling, Brandon? All right.
Sure. We have some record breaking moments.
Yeah. We'll get right into, ratings. We'll start in ratings, and we will start with SmackDown. Well, first off, we'll talk about July 2nd SmackDown, and then we'll circle back to what the overnight is for the July 9th SmackDown. But let's just start with the July 2nd SmackDown. 1.8 million, almost 1.9, with a 0.46 and 18-49. That is slightly down for overall. Good percentage down for 18-49, which was 0.54 on June 25th.
That is the second lowest SmackDown on Fox ever, by the way. So not a good rating for SmackDown. Maybe has something to do with the July 4th weekend. But the only
and that overnight gas station.
The overnight gas station. No,
you never hear that. So there was a whole thing that Tracy Smothers used to say that, like, he worked an indie show, an indie promoter was like, oh yeah, the draw should have been bigger. And he would always make the joke and it'd be like, well, yeah, that 24/7 gas station opened up down the street and that's right. Stiff competition.
But the lowest ever on Fox, yeah. Obviously there's been preemptions to FS1 because of the World Series and those have done like under a million. But this one, last year, This time of the year last year is the lowest on Fox, under 1.8 million. It's somewhere in the high 1.7 million viewers. So it's an interesting coincidence that it would happen in the same time of the year. Maybe the July 4th weekend does have some sort of effect on people's behavior as it relates to watching SmackDown. But and maybe you could say, well, this is sort of a lame duck period. We're waiting to go back to the touring with live fans. We have now had the last SmackDown, the one that just happened, is the last SmackDown in the Thunderdome. The last Raw in the Thunderdome will be tomorrow as we record this. But yeah.
And let's talk about that last SmackDown. We'll talk about the overnight that looks to be at 1.88 million viewers. So right around what we have here for July 2nd. You know, the final numbers usually come in slightly higher. Brandon, you're going to estimate that will be around 2 million even. So, you know, that will be an increase, which would be up from, you know, as you said, the second lowest ever on Fox last week. So yeah, I mean, could the 4th of July weekend have something to do with it? You know, normally that makes things go down because people are out of town, not watching. I think that was what, you know, contributed to impact, but
we'll talk about that. We're going to talk quite a bit about ratings today. So I don't want to get too ahead of myself.
All right. So yeah, let's talk about Raw, the second last Raw in the Thunderdome without a crowd. Monday, July 5th, 1.472 million with a 0.41 and 18.49. If you look from that from a month prior, they were doing 0.49 and 18.49 on June 14th, with 1.74. So, it's, you know, over a month's time. As I keep doing these month evaluations, to keep getting smaller and smaller for the audience
in
Raw.
In your table here, there's something wrong.
You did, here. But you said you like to gauge like a month. You know, what a month
is intended to be the most recent rating versus that of the week prior. Big headline here is this is the lowest viewed Raw of all time, in all likelihood. Going back to this has been a show that's been on TV since January 1993, the longest running weekly episodic TV show that is not The Simpsons or Meet the Press. Our friend Corey pointed out to me, he showed me the snippet from Matt Watch, the old newsletter Matt Watch, where I don't have it on me right now, but we know the number of households that were viewing on, I think it's a week in September in 1993. And if the viewers per household was something like 1.45, then that episode in 1993 in September might have been less viewed than this episode. But then Dave Meltzer quote tweeted me and said that's unlikely, that the viewers per household at that time was usually nearly two or something like that. So this is probably linear TV being what it is, but this is probably the least viewed, the smallest total audience that Raw has ever had. This was down only slightly. This is the third lowest ever in 1849, but the least viewed total audience probably of all time for Raw. And it's what's 2020 minus 1993. That's going on 30 years.
So we'll see if that increases. Probably not much tomorrow, but maybe the week after with crowds and the day after Money in the Bank. Mm-hmm. So NXT on July 6th did 654,000.
Great American Bash. With a
point. Yep. Yeah, that's right. It was the Great American Bash, point 18 in 1849, slightly up from June 29th with 640,000 and a point 13 in the 1849. So yeah, the Great American Bash episode where they set up more matches for the next week.
so this was not an impressive number compared to what they've been doing lately. The big narrative to me is that NXT is not doing that much better than it was doing when it was running head to head with NXT, or when it was running head to head with AEW Dynamite. That said, they were going against an NBA final game. I think it was game one of who's in the NBA finals, the Bucks and the Suns, right? Actually,
yep, Bucks and Suns, Phoenix and Milwaukee. Yep.
Yeah. So I don't view this super negatively compared to what their trends were in the weeks leading up to this, but it's hard to imagine NXT being able to put on a stronger lineup than they put on for that Great American Bash episode. And they'll probably do these sort of peak episodes from time to time between takeovers, just like they've done in the past year. They did a good rating for their Halloween Havoc episode in October last year. But even this could not break 700. And I think it's questionable whether this show is going to be over 700,000 viewers ever again, unless there's some dramatic difference or some added star power here.
I think if Samoa Joe actually wrestles, that might do it.
Maybe. And another thing to talk about here too, and we're going to talk about, you know, in a minute about how, you know, Raw and SmackDown are going to get this bump from the return to touring. NXT is not returning to touring. There's no plans that I know of for them even to return to Full Sail. So they're in the Capitol Wrestling Center, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is the Performance Center. Where are people training at this moment, by the way, at the Performance Center? But anyway, they can probably get a comparable number of people in the Capitol Wrestling Center that were in Full Sail, maybe. But my point is, it's not as if they're waiting to go back to wrestle in front of thousands and thousands of fans like Raw and SmackDown are. There's no bump coming up for them in terms of getting their live audience back. The live audience they've got is about the one that they're going to get is about the one that they've got right now. So this is post-COVID NXT right now.
I wonder if they're going to keep the fans on their screen. Because they do have like the small audience, but
that's got to be so expensive, though. I mean, it's probably not as elaborate as the Thunderdome is, and Lord knows they can afford it. They're a very profitable company, but I mean, if you can just increase the capacity in that building and put more real fans in there who will pay admission, why keep screens there that are probably a lot more expensive to keep there when you can open up that space for something that will generate revenue?
Yeah, I wonder if Full Sail doesn't want to start back up. I mean, it would make sense to at least get that. You don't want to do your small house show touring or whatever it might be, but like open Full Sail back up, you know, do that.
It's something that I probably should be looking into more, or somebody could ask the question. I remember early on in the pandemic, there were issues with the Full Sail contract. It's plausible that the Full Sail contract has expired, and they just let it expire due to the uncertainty with COVID, and they haven't renewed it.
Renegotiated, yeah. All right. Moving on to AEW Dynamite, and this was a Dynamite had some surprises as well. 871,000. This was actually the return to the road too. This was in Miami, Florida. 871,000 with a point 33 in the 1849. But you compare that to the week before, 880,000 with a point 35 in the 1849.
So this is the second week back in the normal time slot. They did an impressive number last week against an NBA playoff game. No NBA playoff game. We're now in the finals. There's no NBA game happening. while this show was going on. There was a Stanley Cup final game, though, but NHL games are less viewed than NBA games. But the rating was down. I don't know really how to read that. I think it's not a huge deal, but you would think that with what happened last week with tougher competition, when you have weaker competition here this week and the return to touring, if that means anything, which apparently didn't mean a lot. Now, granted, you've got, you know, you've been at Daly's place in front of, you know, over 1,000 people a number of times now, but this was more than twice as many as people as have been at Daly's place. This was just under 4,000 people, but from what I saw of it, it was a super hot crowd. Looks like they had a good show, but the return to touring, at least for them, now it's not as stark a contrast as it will be for Raw and SmackDown. But the return to touring did not mean really anything for them in terms of viewership.
No, I mean, what I'm very intrigued by was the Tommy and Malakai Black thing not really even being teased, because we remember Tony Khan said himself that like TNT didn't really want surprises that weren't announced. So like, I wonder if TNT is going to see that there wasn't much of a ratings change. And they, you know, they debuted, which looks to be a big star.
No offense to Tommy, and he's not going to pop a number. If we advertise his appearance, I don't see this number being dramatic.
No, but if they teased like there's going to be a new, you know, a new star or whatever coming this week, and especially with everyone that's been released and everything, people, who could it be? You know, so. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what a lot of companies are using as their angle for their next big show. So who could show up?
But I guess something that this brings to mind, and again, it's not as stark a contrast for AEW as it will be for Raw and SmackDown, but it doesn't inspire any additional confidence that Raw and SmackDown are going to have this big improvement to ratings, because it didn't mean that much for AEW. Now, maybe it's just the case that they went from 1,000 fans to 4,000 fans. Raw and SmackDown are going to go from zero fans to tens of thousands of fans. I remain skeptical that there's going to be any sustained increase in ratings.
I know you're thinking there will be like a couple weeks and then it will go down. I don't know how high it's going to be for in those couple weeks. I mean, I'm with you. It's not going to sustain. But this is a summer that we've never ever, you know, approached before. This is a summer after people have got out of the pandemic. So like, you know, this is a summer where in a lot of states, people's unemployment are going to end up in the fall and they're just trying to cross off bucket list stuff. And you know what I mean? Like people are out doing things.
Do I have the NBA number here? The NBA finals game one did 8.56 million viewers, which is up from last year's COVID in the bubble. Probably right. Game one. Which was 7.41 million viewers. 2019, which I think is a LeBron James final. 13 million viewers. So you have to go back to the last pre-COVID year to get a higher number. And that was 5 million higher. But it's not as if you look at year-over-year Raw ratings, there's I would have to look, because those were the doldrums of Raw in July 2020. But yeah, the point is it's not any higher. I mean, we just had the lowest Raw rating ever. So it's definitely down in that case.
All right. And then we're going to finish off with Impact Wrestling. Thursday, July, 120,000 with a 0.04 and 18 and 49. And if you compare that to that July 1st rating of 70,000 with 0.02. So, you know, they're out of the holiday and there's an increase there. So I really think that was a huge factor. Is, you know, I know it can make excuses, but
the factor was the guide problem. Impact not listed on the guide.
I forgot about that.
That was the case for apparently everyone on DirecTV, everyone on Comcast, maybe other systems too. So we're just sort of back to normal. Not a great number, even for at Impact standards, 120,000. That's, you know, just a little bit over what their average was or what their median was for May and June, which is 118,000. But it tells me that they just did their all-time low last week, which was, what, 69? No, 70,000 viewers?
Brought it up to 70,000, yeah.
And that tells me, well, it was because of the guide issues, where people had probably were confused about whether or not the show was on and just found something else to do that night, while some people still watched it. I said last week, we do know that the quarter hour for that episode, the lowest quarter hour, was the main event quarter hour involving Kenny Omega and Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows and their six-man tag. So I think that and maybe it's a smaller sample and it's not a great quality sample, but that tells you that that wasn't a huge draw for them. And I know at least when I tweet these impact ratings, people want to talk about how, look, AEW is killing them. So I put a graph here. I've been reporting the ratings every day, right? Except for Friday, because there's no rating on Friday. Wait, no, there's the impact rating on Friday. Anyway, I've been reporting all the numbers that we're talking about here. I've been reporting on Patreon and on Twitter, but with the deeper details on Patreon. And what we see in the overall trends, I took the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months before AEW talent started to appear on Impact Wrestling, and the 8 months, is it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months after now. We're not in a full month of July yet, but what we see is the total viewership in May and June is down to the lowest levels over that time period. But the 18 to 49 is still higher in this, let's call it the AEW era of Impact, than it was before, which is something we've talked about on other episodes. I was talking to someone earlier this week who suggested that maybe there was a decline in popularity of Impact that AEW's involvement with Impact delayed, and now we're experiencing it. I don't believe that Impact is less popular because of AEW.
One Impact number I'm definitely looking forward to keeping an eye on is, and I don't, obviously I can go back in on the Patreon and see what the rating, the post Slammiversary rating was last year with a lot of surprises, but this is pre AEW relationship. And then now you're going to have a Slammiversary, which more surprises, of course, because we had a bunch of releases, perfect timing for them, in an AEW relationship, which may be over by Slammiversary, but you know, storyline wise, but I'm intrigued to see the comparison from that to that. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to dig in and look at what you had and what that date was. So.
There's a column in the program data tab that lists post pay per view. It identifies if an episode is after a pay per view.
You're way ahead of me on that one there. All right. Any final thoughts about ratings before we go into events?
No, we might draw back on it later, but no, we're good for now. Go ahead.
All right, let's go to events. Just some updates on some more milestone events that, you know, we talked a lot last week about, you know, July and August shows, but we kind of want to talk about September here. AEW's next pay-per-view All Out, which went on sale this week, this past week, 100% sold. So 9,000 seats, 100% sold out for All Out. And then that AEW Dynamite, which will be on September 1st, and that is also in Chicago, that 70% sold with 4,300 out, and the Rampage will be in Chicago as well on September 3rd, 72% sold with 4,400 out. So, looking pretty good for them for 3 days, you know, in Chicago, and with not just them, but I know there is a lot of, independent companies, that are kind of piggybacking on that weekend, running as well. And then, the MSG and SmackDown on September 10th, 74% sold with 6,700 out at the Garden. And even if they sell out the Garden, they'll still lose money, but you know.
Yeah. And so the Ring of Honor Best in the World pay-per-view is happening right now. Actually, let's talk about the Road Rager, which I kind of alluded to earlier. So that has happened. We have an event that has happened here in this sort of what we might call the post-COVID era, Delta variants notwithstanding. The AEW Road Rager Dynamite episode, according to WrestleTix, we're relying on the great job that WrestleTix is doing tracking all of the ticket outlet data that's, you know, that's in their seating maps. 3,738 is WrestleTix count of tickets distributed. I asked someone at AEW if that's leaving out anything important, like walk-up sales or something else, which we're not thinking of. And I was told that's in the ballpark, this number, 3,738. So I would go with that as roughly the paid attendance. Ring of Honor Best in the World happening right now. This might not be the latest, most up-to-date number, because I think WrestleTix might have counted again since then. But 447 is the number. Apparently Joe Koff was quoted somewhere saying that every ticket that they've put on sale is sold, which is not the case. That 447 was only 69% of the capacity, and I don't think they sold it out by bell time. but this week, Cedar Park is 100% sold out. That's going to have about 4,400 people in attendance. SmackDown is nearly sold out for Houston at last count. That is on July 16th, next week, Friday. Money in the Bank virtually sold out at 98%, just under 10,000 there. And Raw, the first Raw on July 19th in Dallas, 7,000 distributed. That's 85% sold out. So these events for WWE, I would say, are doing respectably. AEW is doing smaller venues. I've broken this out. I would call this a very early analysis because we don't have a ton of past events at this point. But AEW's ticket sales for they're basically only doing Dynamites and a pay per view, but their ticket sales are just under what the Super Show ticket sales are. So we sort of have pay per views and Raws and SmackDowns, and then we have Super Shows, house shows, and then we have Dynamite just under that. So we'll see how that plays out over time. Garland, Texas Dynamite on July 21st has 4,500 tickets out. That's 81% sold out. And then we have two Super Shows for WWE on the weekend of July 24th and July 25th in Pittsburgh and Louisville, respectively. The Pittsburgh event, 80% sold. In terms of their capacity, they're setting it up for about 7,300, just under 6,000 tickets sold for that event. And Louisville, with a 6,000 seat capacity, less than half sold. So they've got to book Ricochet in a big match there, I think. And then we're just going to go up to July here. The Kansas City, Missouri Raw on July 26th, with a capacity of 6,368, has 4,528. Tickets distributed at this point. That's a 71% sellout rate. Again, still lots of time to sell tickets here. And the AEW Fight for the Fallen episode of Dynamite in Charlotte, July 28th, 77% sold, capacity of about 6,000, about 4,500 out. Again, all these numbers courtesy of our friend at WrestleTix. And we have some new dates for WWE announced this week.
Yeah, I will get right into that, Brandon. We had some new dates announced this past week by WWE. Here's the dates in order. Saturday, September 11th, a Super Show at the Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C., followed up by another Super Show on Sunday, September 12th at the Times Union Center in Albany, New York. Monday, September 13th, Raw, that's going to be at the TD Garden in Boston. And then Friday, September 17th, they'll have SmackDown at the State Farm Arena in Atlanta, Georgia. The house shows that weekend, which are announced as WWE Live and not Super Show. Saturday, September 18th in the North Charleston Coliseum in North Charleston, South Carolina. And Sunday, September 19th, the James Brown Arena in Augusta, Georgia. We have Raw, which will be September 20th at the PNC Arena in Raleigh, New York. Friday, September 24th, SmackDown. Actually, that'll be my birthday. They'll be at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Saturday, September 25th, Super Show at the Giant Center in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And Extreme Rules at the Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio on Sunday, September 26th, followed by a Raw on Monday, September 27th at the Heritage Bank Center in Cincinnati, Ohio. All these tickets are going on sale this Friday on the 16th, and it will also be the day that the Arthur Ashe Stadium tickets go on sale for AEW.
Yeah. So what this sort of tells me is that they're announcing how many house shows here? Two? three, well, if you count the super shows, five house shows. So they're not dissuaded by the sales of the house shows to this point. They feel comfortable enough that they're going to keep going with this.
Is the WWE Live naming a hint that, and you know, I had this conversation with a friend of mine over the weekend, that they possibly will end up trying running two shows the same night, like different crews, that they'll go to two different cities. And
yeah, I think Super Show means there's Raw and SmackDown roster there, and yeah. I think Live means there's one or the other.
Yeah, and then they've already announced more live, you know.
Yeah, we've already. Yeah. I think we discussed this before when we were looking at the UK shows that are announced. There's W Live shows that are just a SmackDown house shows, basically, in the UK, in addition to the Raw that's happening in London. But yeah, you went over the MSG show already, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Well, I understand that the ticket prices for the MSG show are pretty high. But yeah, they've sold 74% of that out at this point. It'll be interesting to see how much the ticket demand holds up, and whether this is sort of the normal level of demand, or whether this decreases over time. It's a really great thing that we have WrestleTix following this in such detail. We have numbers for ticket sales in WWE's filings that they've reported, not per show, but per quarter. We would get a total attendance for North America and international. We would get average ticket price, and we would get total attendance. And when they say attendance, they do mean tickets sold. So we will have that to compare to over time. And we will, if WrestleTix continues to do the sort of tracking that they've done for live events, we're going to get a really detailed and granular look at really what's going on here as far as, is the demand immediately after the return to touring, is that going to taper off? And if so, how much? I'm not sure. I think it will taper off somewhat for WWE. If you remember in the time right before COVID, WWE was canceling some house shows. We didn't have somebody counting using automation to count the blue dots on the ticket map at that time. But there were some pictures of SmackDown venues with a lot of open seats. So it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So from that, we're going to move on to an announcement that was made this week by the WWE. The July 23rd edition of WWE SmackDown on Fox will feature a split site broadcast with multiple matches.
SmackDown on the road.
Yep, and it will be with multiple matches at the Rolling Loud Miami Music Festival, and the remainder of the evening will be held at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland. From the press release, gracing the same stage as festival headliners Travis Scott, Post Malone, and A$AP Rocky, WWE superstars will compete in matches live from Rolling Loud Miami. Quote from said Tariq, and I think Sharif, I could be getting that wrong, co-founder and co-CEO of Rolling Loud. I grew up on sweet chin music, mesmerized by the spectacle that was Vince McMahon and company have built in WWE. The idea of weaving our two storylines into one world, one must-see event, is electrifying. And this was a quote from Rolling Loud co-founder and co-CEO Matt Zingler. And I quote, "If you smell what the WWE and Rolling Loud is cooking, give me a hell yeah." So there we go.
Also quoted in this press release was, try to pronounce this, Scott Zangolini, who is the new WWE Senior Vice President of Revenue Strategy and Development. He's one of Nick Khan's new hires, a former employee at CAA. So usually when people get quoted in here, it means that they had a lot to do with putting this deal together. So that looks like something that's been set up by somebody who's recently been brought into the company by Nick Khan. Meanwhile, there's going to be an audience there in Cleveland, I don't know, watching half the show that they paid to be there live for on a screen. Cleveland, last I looked, it's a StubHub outlet, but it seemed to be doing well. Not that many tickets left. The reaction that I've got on Twitter when I shared this press release, there were some people criticizing the idea that you're going to make people sit there in Cleveland and, you know, watch half this show on a screen. I just wish wrestling would be wrestling. I think it would be in their economic interest to just be wrestling. But I think there's a lot of things like this that are encouraged to happen. And I'm sure they worked very hard to put this deal together. But there's a lot of creative decisions that are put together in this company because I think it satisfies an urge to be, we're not a wrestling company. We're a media company. Did you know, Chris Gullo, this is not a wrestling podcast. This is a media podcast. Okay. If anybody who watched wrestling for the last 10 years, with any sort of, common sense of what the average person is interested in, every time you saw the WWE bring in musical guests at WrestleMania, for example, why would you want to do this? It depends on the execution. Maybe it'll be executed well and it'll be okay. But this could, you know, I mean, everything from a live event standpoint, you know, where you might be dissatisfying customers who are sitting in the seats in Cleveland to like, this might not go well on TV and it might sort of like, you know, you've brought some people back who are tuned into SmackDown the week before because they went back to touring and now there's finally thousands of people in the seats again. And maybe now you're okay. The second one, the people who made it to the second episode, half of it is at like a musical event.
I have a few thoughts that, I want, you know, your perspective on. First off, I just keep going back to the Nick Khan IP. And from my perspective, from my opinion, it's not, he doesn't think of how you could make your IP better, what it has done in the past, but what else can you do with your IP? And this just seems like, okay, how do we branch out? Oh, let's get WWE, our superstars, involved with a music festival instead of, hey, we're going back to live audience. Let's try to make this product as best as I can in a ring, in a show. No, how do we take this IP and put it in different areas, which we're going to kind of talk about that a little bit later too, you know?
And I don't mean that really as a criticism of Nick Khan. He's there to do a job for Vince. And Vince likes this kind of stuff because it makes him feel like he's not just in the wrestling business. He's in the show business. But I think it's telling the quotes that the people from the founders and co-CEOs of Rolling Loud had to offer, which were, you know, even after they filtered it through PR and everything, you got them referencing Sweet Chin Music and The Rock, if you smell what he's cooking. I'm surprised that they weren't quoted as saying, bring back the Attitude Era. You're right.
Yeah. We agree, you know, this is a very Nick Khan-esque move. Yes. But I want to ask you, how much influence does Fox have on this? We talked about it. Ratings are
Fox
slipping.
Probably loves it too, because it sounds good to, you know, yeah. Oh, wow. You're doing that? Whoa, oh, wow. And mainstream meet people? And oh, wow. That's great. Cool. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out, though.
How they can make Fox happy. I mean, Fox loves doing stuff like this. They air a lot of music awards and little festival. They do a lot of this type of stuff. Yeah.
I would love to see the quarter hour performance of, you know, what are the deltas on the quarters that these matches at Rolling Loud appear in? What are they usually like? And what are they like for this episode? Do people tune this out? That's what I'm saying. We probably won't know, but that'll be interesting.
I feel really bad for the audience of Cleveland. They're right? Finally back to live WWE wrestling. And
most of the tickets are already sold. So it's like, we already got your money, you know?
It's so funny. I get a text on Friday, like 7-ish, from a friend in Cleveland. He's like, hey, you thinking about coming out here to SmackDown? I'm like, I don't know. And then this happened a couple hours later. I follow with a text. Yeah, absolutely not. Yes. I'll be staying in Buffalo. Yeah.
But
all right.
I wanted to add to you, I guess, of all the reasons, I said something similar on Twitter, of all the reasons to be excited about the return of live fans in attendance, particularly at WWE. We've kind of already had them in AEW. The thing that I'm most interested to see play out, which I think has been the most interesting storyline in wrestling for the last 10 years, or at least seven or so, has been this feud between Vince McMahon and the fans. This feud has been on hold for about 16 months, much to the relief, I'm sure, of the CEO, chairman, Class B shareholder. But now it starts again this Friday. And it's going to be really interesting to see. I mean, it's not as if Vince has gotten, you know, more in touch in the time that he hasn't had to face the fans. I think the product has gotten worse. Our NPS trend for Raw and for SmackDown is down in this quarter versus the last two. I think he's been less burdened by having to worry about getting the right reactions or after having to worry about the response of fans. It's, you know, it's, as other people have said, this is Vince McMahon's dream to have an audience that he can literally just, you know, have his production team press a button and he gets the reaction that you're supposed to get. And now he's got to hand the microphone back to the fans. And I'm really interested to see not just what the fans do with certain characters or the entire show, whether they give the appropriate responses, but just whether they're going to be, I don't know, mic'd honestly. Whether the this is awesome.mp3 and the fans cheering.mp3 gets played when it's supposed to be played so that you can't hear the fans. I mean, I haven't studied it closely, but it seemed to be that there was some audio manipulation at WrestleMania. You can find clips online of videos of, you know, people who were there live when Hulk Hogan came out. They booed the hell out of him, and it certainly didn't come across that way on the Peacock. And I've heard people say that, you know, I think even pre-COVID there was some manipulation of the audio, maybe particularly when it came to, you know, Roman Reigns, who was getting booed when he should have been getting cheered.
All right. Moving on, but kind of some of the IP stuff I was just talking about. Andrew Zarian noted on the Mattman podcast that Stephanie McMahon is set for a meeting at the end of this month to talk about some of the ideas that have been pitched by one of WWE's TV partners. Zarian said, "I don't know which network it was, but somebody told me that Steph has a meeting with one of the networks at the end of the month for pitched ideas from the network. I don't know if this is a common thing that they do or if this is a regular thing, but I know that some of the networks are pitching ideas." And I talked about that IP. I want to know what you think it might be. I think it's probably Peacock related stuff, maybe some more unscripted television type stuff. We've seen the success of Miz and Maryse, and, you know, and Total Bellas and Total Divas look to be done. So
yeah, that's true.
So yeah. It could be stuff like that. And yeah, I'm intrigued to see what you think it might be, but I definitely think it's going to be the Peacock. And there's been some interesting scheduling changes on Peacock too, taking off some programming. So I wonder if they're trying to shuffle the deck there.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I view this sort of fundamentally different than the people who are involved probably view this. I view this as, yeah, I was just looking at, before we sat down to record this, I've been looking through Google web search, comparing various sports leagues. You're just looking at the trends of various sports leagues over time. And did you know that, like, WWE has, up until the last few years, has greater Google web search volume worldwide than the NHL did until a couple years ago. and kind of what I'm alluding to with when we were talking about the NBA rating, NBA Finals game one is up from last year, but not up from the year before that. So you may want to say that, well, all TV is down. And to an extent, that's true. But the TV ratings for Raw, especially in 2019, pre-COVID, and 2020, were down worse than the rate of TV overall when I've looked at non-news cable. So there's that. And then I've looked at this before, but just to make sure I had the most up-to-date data, I was grabbing it again. And you look at all these sports leagues, you go through, you know, whether it's WB, AEW, New Japan, wrestling companies, or whether it's, media companies, whatever they are. But then you compare that to the NFL and the NBA, college football, take all the most popular sports leagues in the world. And they're not exhibiting this impressively down to the right trend. at least in Google web search, that that WWE is. And you see this decline in popularity, I believe, reflected in the decline in ticket sales from 2017 and onward, both average and total, both North America and international. You saw that this decline in popularity reflected in the stagnation of W Network subscribers, and in merchandise sales pre-COVID as well. E-commerce has done really well during COVID and has largely offset the loss of any merch. But I view this as I almost think that wrestling should be like the fourth most popular sport in the United States, but it's not. And the only idea that you could really put into effect to improve WWE's situation and its economics is to remove the head of creative and put someone else in charge. But that's sacrilege. You can't say that. And nobody who wants to keep their job will say that. So it's going to be what it is for the indefinite future.
Would you say fourth or fifth? Because I would say Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, and UFC. And then WWE. It makes martial arts is especially UFC, is just...
We can debate about the slot. And
yeah.
And if we're talking about pro sports, that's one thing you can include. College football is huge. And college basketball is big too. If
separate, yeah.
But this should be way more popular than it is. And it's not.
You're right. I mean, especially you see the explosion in MMA, and boxing's making a comeback too.
And I kind of feel bad, like dwelling on the Vince thing, but it's just so right there and in everybody's face. And it's the biggest story that there is, and everybody sort of talks around it a lot or doesn't address it, and it just doesn't make sense to me. And I think like a lot of people don't want to talk about it because they don't want to make people mad or ruin their chances of working there someday or something like that or you know, upset their sources or their access. But I just can't. I feel like we have to stop sometimes, and if we're going to be honest, be like, this is what's going on. That's all.
It's what every release talent says when they do their first podcast interview.
Well, I know Vince loves Amien's ideas. That's what I've heard. It was just the other people maybe that didn't like him.
Well, other people said differently on their release things. Any final thoughts on this? You know, like I said, I personally just think, I know this is just a general wise meeting and all that, but I do think they are looking to change a little bit of the programming on Peacock. And I'll let you bring this up to you while we're talking about it. The Lex Luger documentary got taken off for 4th of July. It was supposed to air 4th of July, taken off schedule, not put up on Peacock at all. No explanation from WWE, nothing. Tonight, there was supposed to be a Stone Cold, Kevin Nash, Broken Skull discussions. Taken off the schedule, no explanation, no nothing. I don't know what's going on. And I don't know if they're looking to shuffle the deck on the programming there or what it may be. But I find Luger may have been one thing. Now Nash on a Stone Cold, Broken Skull? That's just odd to me.
Yeah. Both of those things together suggests... it's a Peacock scheduling thing, or maybe they want to put it on a live stream or something like that. You know, did I put it in our notes here that we got some numbers for it? Is in the next thing, but let's just say it now. There's a Bloomberg article that came out earlier this week saying that Peacock had about 42 million signups as of late April. They're going to have their next earnings report on the same day as WWE's, which we'll talk about in a minute. But 42 million signups, okay, signups, whatever that means. They got user accounts. But about a third of those, 14 million actively use the service at least once a month, and 14 million, or about 20%, of the 14 million, 3 million pay for it. So that's interesting to know. W Network domestic subscribers at last count were about 1.1 million. So that's like almost half. We don't know any information about whether. You know, what's the conversion rate like? How would they even track that in terms of how many former W Network subscribers are now using Peacock? But it's not as if, I guess my point is, I think there's some insight here, and it's not as if Peacock has monthly active users that are multiple times more than W Network had subscribers. So that's interesting to know.
All right. So yeah, you kind of alluded to it, but the WWE announced that the quarter two earnings report is going to be July 29th with a conference call at 5 p.m. Covering the period from April 1st to June 30th. I'm not sure when you plan on actually doing a episode on that timing wise, but I may be able to do it as my work schedules change a little.
Oh,
bit
really?
It's just a little, just
that's
a little
big news here. That's big news.
Let's just say if you could do 8:30, I could rush home and do it.
That's
not sure how long it's going to go,
yeah,
but
probably work that out because, so the call will be at 5. They'll probably finish 6, a little after 6. And, it's often the case that there's things that I don't really realize until the next day after I sifted through things again, but yeah, we will do one that night. And,
yeah. Yeah.
Great. And now everyone can include in.
All right. We can really kind of talk about this more into detail in the next couple weeks and what your predictions are and everything for this, but but at least now we have a date.
Right. We'll have another episode of the Nikon podcast. See what scoops he's got to reveal. Last time, remember, he reported that the NHL and NBCU were done. Turned out to be true. More in his interest than his company's interest. He's alluding to Apple being interested in sports content. There's some iffy reports out there this past week, I think in Sports Business Journal, maybe among others, that Apple is in quote unquote early talks to get the NFL Sunday Ticket. The article apparently also notes, I don't have it in front of me, but it apparently also notes that it's early and it sounds like it may not even happen though. But you get a lot of people in the media world excited when you talk about one of the fan companies, one of the big tech companies, getting interested in live sports content, which is the big moment in sports media business that people are just, you know, they're waiting for. In a lot of ways, I don't know, this is not my area of expertise, but in a lot of ways, maybe that makes sense for Apple because Netflix obviously has a big piece of this market. They have a really strong presence. They have 60 some odd million subscribers in the US. Disney's doing well. I think they're in the 30s or 40 million subscribers. I don't know what Apple's number is, but I'm sure it's far lower than that. So what's Apple going to do here if they're going to really get into more video consumption? They're probably going to come out with a car soon, I think, but that's not video. So maybe one way is to just, you know, invest more in live sports. We'll see. And Amazon is the other piece of hype there too. We will have on July 29th. That's the date, right? Yes. On July 29th, we will have 2 Raws and 2 SmackDowns with ratings reported. So I'm sure there will be awareness of that. There'll probably be discussion of that. I'm sure if the ratings are up, which I would be shocked if they are not up, W will be hyping how much the ratings have been up. And there may be some discussion about it on the Q&A with stock analysts. We will get some sort of indication, I expect, about the ticket sales at WrestleMania, which we've already reported what they are. Do you want to pull that number up while I ramble, Gullo? The number of paid ticket sales will, if I'm off by some degree, we'll find out maybe in W's public filings. It's something like 20,000 each day. We will get, what we don't know is what the vending merchandise sales were like. And we should get an idea of that because vending merchandise is a line on W's trending schedules. And it's an item in each one of their quarterly reports. So we'll get an idea of how much per head was sold and just how much overall was sold on the 2-day WrestleMania. Will we get some sort of clarity about whether or not WWE is going to go back to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia before the end of the year? A $50 to $55 million trip every time they go in their benefit. Did you find the WrestleMania number?
All right. So what was the number you wanted me to look up for that?
let's go with paid attendance for WrestleMania.
Was it Mania paid attendance? All right, let's do that here for you. All right.
Oh, yeah. While you're looking that up, W Network revenue in Q1 was really high because apparently NBCU gave them a lot of money up front. For some reason, that's not totally clear to me in the first period of the deal. I think we'll get a better idea of what the sort of normal compensation to WB for W Network content on Peacock is going to be, since now we will have this full quarter of Q2, which is from April 1st to June 30th. We'll get a better idea of what the sort of regular compensation is for WB. It'll probably escalate over time, and probably on an annual basis it'll grow at a rate of a single or maybe a low double digit of percent. But we'll get an idea of that when they report.
All right. So, yeah. So, WWE, you know, they previously announced almost 50,000, but, with paid ticket sales with the, Tampa Sports Authority, around 40,000 was the overall between two nights, about 20,000 apiece, a little over. Mm-hmm. So, and you recorded that article. So that's why I knew it was the right information to find.
The original article, wrestling card. The original article is on WrestleNomics.com.
Yeah. Yes. But, all right. Moving on, and I'm going to let you kind of do your thing here. And this, what we're about to talk about was actually a talking point in my car ride to New Jersey, because you pulled a small sample size, but we think if it's even a bigger side, we think WWE number would be more. But anyways, who books the most rematches? And you can kind of get into that. Yeah. But from my perspective is, we expect, like, if you went back like a year or even further, that,
so this is going back to 2014 now.
Oh, okay. See, I thought I might have saw on Twitter just a small sample size.
So here's what happened. I did the last 12 months, but I did it. Okay. But my formula wasn't what I said it was. I made a mistake. I was,
to me, that's what I originally saw.
I was including, I think, matches that happened after the given match. But anyway, what is this? Okay. What are we looking at here? Here's the question. Let's take a given match from any of AEW, WWE, New Japan, Impact. And the question is, how, and we're not including house shows, only things that are televised. How many of the matches that I'm seeing have already happened in the last 6 months? That's the question. How often are you booking rematches, basically, right? So for WWE in 2021, through June. So for the first 6 months of 2021, 39% of the matches that you see on television and pay-per-view, 39% have already happened at some point in the previous 6 months. That is the highest. This is only main roster WWE. It is lower for NXT at 18%. It is lower for New Japan at 17%. It's a little bit higher for Impact at 20%. And it is the lowest for AEW at just 4%.
I'm honestly not surprised.
Yeah, no,
I would expect everybody to be higher.
Yeah. See, if you go back in time, if you go back to all the way to 2014, it's at its highest, 51% for that entire year. It's 45% for the year after that, 46%, 42%, and it gets a little lower. So it's better than it used to be. It's better than it used to be, apparently. I think one thing that I'm not really getting at here that it would be a stronger criticism, I guess, is, and I don't know how to quantify this or really define what the criteria is I'm talking about, but I think people will know what I'm talking about here when I explain this, but like, how often is it just the same people wrestling each other in different combinations over and over again? I think it's a lot of that. And then that's what makes people feel like, I think it's one reason why the viewership isn't higher than it is, because what are you missing? You're watching this, a lot of the same people wrestle each other in different combinations over and over again, whether it's the same singles match or whether it's people in tag matches, and nothing ever seems to really get resolved. There don't seem to be strong consequences, et cetera. So.
All right. Any final thoughts on any of that? Because I know he kind of broke it down here with
very numbers heavy, so I don't want to read a bunch of numbers in audio, but you can find these tables on my Twitter that will... It breaks it down by promotion, and then it breaks it down by TV show, and then it breaks it down by pay-per-view.
All right. So, Lastly, before we ended here, we did want to send our condolences and our thoughts to Moogie, who, you know, unfortunately lost his father recently. So, you know, I know, you know, so we're sending that thoughts to him and his family on that, and condolences.
Yeah. So if people don't know, if you're a new listener, at Moogie, Chris Harrington, is the creator of Russellomics and of this podcast. He no longer works with us. We released him and sent him on to Future Endeavors. He is now the Senior Vice President of Business Strategy at AEW, but he lost his father the other day. And he's posted about this on Twitter, and you know, we send best wishes to him and his family. And you see a lot of people in the wrestling world sending him nice messages as well.
All right. So any final thoughts before we give our plugs?
I think that's all. What have you got going on, Chris Gullo?
All right. Well, coming up, we've got kind of a nice little off weekend here. July 24th, I'll be doing some re-announcing some MMA ground force fights at the Keenan Center in Lockport, New York. And then July 31st, Empire State Wrestling. And I'll be at Buffalo River Works. And August 1st, I will be in Messina, New York for New Breed Entertainment at the Messina Arena. So that's
how far drives that from Buffalo?
Five hours. It's all the way up in North Country.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Very close to like Ottawa, the border of Ottawa.
Oh, wow.
Okay. That's what I got coming. Other than that, you can follow me, Chris Gullo, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. But Rediscovering the Indies, if you've haven't missed it, the last part of the Rob Black XPW deep dive, really XPW, but a lot of Rob Black in there. Of course, talk about the case, trial case, and all that. So if you missed it, check that out. Rediscovering the Indies on Instagram and Facebook, RTI Pod on Twitter. And then this coming Saturday, we're going to record our episode on Main Event Championship Wrestling with John Collins. John Collins of Main Event Championship Wrestling. Just give you a little teaser.
What region?
He ran one show in the ECW Arena in Philadelphia, but he's from Indiana.
Okay.
This show is infamous because he had a lot of names. He was trying to be the next super fed with the closure of WCW and ECW 2001.
Okay.
And, the story is he faked a heart attack to not pay the talent. So, and there's much more. We're going to get into all that and so much more. Look for that to be released.
I vaguely remember hearing people like joking about, we're all waiting around to get paid. Maybe the promoter's going to fake a heart attack. That sounds familiar.
Yeah. So look for that to come out on July 21st. So,
okay.
And I'll have more information when I plug it next week.
Mm-hmm. I now have two bookings. I don't know if I'm allowed to announce them, though. That has been run through media relations.
A second booking?
Yeah. Has my other booking been announced yet? Do you know? Because I don't know.
It has not.
It's not been announced yet. Okay. Anyway, you can follow WrestleNomics on Twitter at WrestleNomics. You can go to WrestleNomics.com, so on and so forth. You can get access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet and access to my nearly daily reports of ratings with reports across various demographics, my analysis, breakdown, even my opinions sometimes, which are separated from the facts. Those are on Patreon, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. For just $5 a month, you can get access to all that locked content. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gullo.
And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.